Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast between the sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the literate voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew.
How is one?
Literate, apparently. Illiterate or literate? I'm not too sure, but yes.
Literary.
Let's go with that. Yeah, very well. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. I just thought that we would mention a book that you once wrote a long time ago because we've had a bit of feedback on this. You can get the book via Patreon. If you are one of our patrons, you can get that as a digital download. But some people still buy it as a tangible product. And we've had some nice messages in over Twitter. You get the occasional email, the occasional DM on Instagram, just saying how much people enjoy your book.
Indeed. Yeah, I wrote it back in 2010, or was it 11? But 10 years ago, good 10 years ago. It was after the first season I had at Brentford. For those that don't know the story, I actually finished the season. Literally, I was on holiday with my family and just lying by the pool, started writing for no real reason, just started thinking about the season. It was an extraordinary season, started writing, and before I knew it, I'd written an entire book on my BlackBerry, as the story goes.
I can't believe that you actually managed to do that on a BlackBerry. So the whole thing, just with your thumbs.
Just my thumbs.
Tapping
and,
away on
and
those.
The old school keypad on that. Yeah, and that was it. And I'd write a chapter and email it to myself from memory. And before I knew it, a couple of weeks had gone by, I'd written 40,000 words and had something that was resembling a book. So I sent it to an editor, got it tidied up and looked at. And yeah, and I didn't really think much of it. It was more, I didn't really do it for any particular reason at the time. But then when I started writing it, it kind of was a nice way in which I could include all the ideas I'd learned from studying neuro-linguistic programming and other bits of psychology, plus loads of different things from the career itself that I had. And it was just a nice platform to tell the story of the season and then discuss a lot of these ideas. But the bizarre thing for me now is even now, I get the royalties every quarter. So I get an email through every quarter from the publisher and they tell me what the royalties are from the previous quarter. And given that it's now 10 years old, still selling a book every couple of days. So there's still good 30 or 40 sales every 3 months when I get the royalty through.
So what is it about the book that you think appeals to people so much?
I don't know. I guess the fact that, look, it's a story of a season. So whether it's this season, last season, or 10 seasons ago, it doesn't really make a difference because a lot of the ideas that are given in the book are ideas that you can take into games of football as a goalkeeper. And that was, in the end, why I wrote it. You know, as it started to progress, I realised that the story itself is one that would hopefully keep someone gripped, but it's actually the ideas that I'm talking about which are where the value comes from it. And I actually did it in that way as well, that I'm very much one of these. When I read a book, if it's just purely advice or it's techniques, it doesn't really capture my attention. Whereas if there is a storyline that runs through it, it's just a bit easier to follow and you know you're going somewhere, if that makes any sense whatsoever. But that was why I wrote it, based on a story and the fact it was just a bizarre season with injuries and joining a new club, Wembley appearances, etc., etc. So it was just one where I felt there were so many twists and turns that it provided quite a nice platform.
A part two in the offing, maybe.
Maybe. Maybe you could write it, Matthew.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Not on a BlackBerry.
No, absolutely not.
So, graduation, life lessons of a professional goalkeeper or footballer?
Professional footballer. And it's, yeah, as you mentioned, if you are a patron, you can download it for free or you can find it on Amazon.
Good stuff. Okay, head over to Amazon.co.uk, I suppose.
I mean, we can't be promoting Amazon, surely. I mean, they've got enough business, surely. Yeah. Let's promote Patreon instead.
Lovely. Patreon.com/Goalkeepers Union. Just head on over there and you'll get a free digital download of Richard Lee's best-selling book. It was best-selling at one point, wasn't it?
It got ahead. Do you know what? There was one day where, so Amazon have their grades, and it wasn't number one for the whole of Amazon, of course, but for sport in the UK, it was number one for a day or two, which was ahead of, I think from memory, I think Alex Ferguson or Paul Scholes, I can't remember who it was now, had a book out. So for a day, and it was a day when it was in all the different papers. I think I got on Soccer Saturday, Sky Sports News, and I had a big thing in the Mirror. And because of that, for a day or two, I had, you know, a couple of thousand sales, I believe, in a day. And because of that, that particular day, I was then top of the sports for Amazon.
Excellent. Well done.
Thank you.
Going to move on to some correspondence. We've had a WhatsApp in from a lad named Cameron Ponsonby. He's got a couple of questions for you, Rich. He says, hi, Matt. Hi, Rich. Listen to the podcast with David Priest, the process of which has left me with two questions, which I was hoping Rich may be able to help with. Question number one, was chatting to a friend about goalkeeping being a proactive position and a quiet game is more often than not a good game. His response was basically kind of proving the point of the position being misunderstood, that he didn't really buy it and that surely a comfortable 3-0 win is exactly that, comfortable. How would you counter that viewpoint?
I love the fact that these conversations are taking place, and that it feels like there's loads of us out there, loads of soldiers out there that are fighting the good fight. But look, how do you answer it? You're right, by the way. It is a proactive position. Of course, if you stand there and don't open your mouth and allow the game to happen, you are going to concede more goals. And if you are proactively organizing those around you, taking up good positions, doing the techniques that you've learned so often in the various training sessions you're doing. So you're spot on in what you say. And I guess, how do you counteract that argument? And it's tough. I'm just thinking this through as we're talking, because you've just sprung this upon me right now, Matthew. I'd probably say that you give that as an example. Like, ask them, do you genuinely think if a goalkeeper just stood there, didn't say a word, that it would be the same outcome? It would still be that comfortable 3-0 victory? Of course it wouldn't. The goalkeeper, the organisational side of things, they're being able to take good positions, doing the things that people now come to expect, whether that be your distribution into certain areas, whether it be taking up good positions on crosses, or, you know, pickups, or the saves that you make comfortable, but you know it's because of your positioning and reading of the game that's allowed you to do that. And again, we as goalkeepers can talk like this and we understand it, but it can sound like a foreign language if you're trying to explain that to an outfield player. So look, do it as best you can, and hopefully over time it will become a language that is more commonly understood.
Okay, and the second question was, David Priest spoke about how a really good thing about Östersunds was that they were very active about getting the goalkeepers involved in training. How much of a problem is it within football that goalkeepers often train separately, and why does it matter?
I wouldn't say it's necessarily a problem, because I think it is important that it does happen. You know, back in the day, it didn't happen and everyone trained together and goalkeepers didn't necessarily get the specific training that they need. But at the same time, I think it can go too far in that if you find or feel that you are separated from the group, then it can become a them and us. What I tended to find and what worked for me was that we'd go out a little bit earlier as goalkeepers and you'd get that little bit extra work. Then you'd be integrated into the group to do small-sided games, whatever it might be. Then, of course, you'd be doing a lot of gym sessions, a lot of work before training, which was very much together with the team. Although you'd have your own program, because your program is going to be so much different to the outfield players given your needs. However, you would ordinarily be doing that with the outfield players. So I personally don't have too much of an issue with it as long as that balance is struck.
Good stuff. Okay, we've got plenty coming up over the course of the next half an hour or so. We are going to reflect on all the action from the EFL, a bit of Premier League action too, just one game involving Manchester City and Southampton. And the best of the rest from the Champions League. If you'd like to get in touch with us, very easy to do so on Twitter at GKUnion, hello at goalkeepersunion.net, and our phone number 07503673020. On with the show, Richard.
Let's do it, Matthew.
Into the Champions League we go, Richard. We're going to fly right through this.
Let's do it.
Keylor Navas, you like Let's Do It, don't you?
That's become a bit of a thing.
It
now.
Has.
Yeah.
But it's normally just supposed to be at the beginning, but you tend to use it and use it and use it, kind of ruining it a bit, mate.
Ruining a bit, like, yeah. Fascinating. I say a lot. I've kind of ruined that as well. But
we're just going to touch on the Champions League, okay? Keylor Navas, yet again keeping Barcelona at bay. Two key saves in the first half for PSG. One, he tipped onto the bar. The other, the penalty save from Lionel Messi. 9 saves in total. Quite the keeper, the Costa Rica.
Indeed, Costa Rican.
Yeah, I know. I was doing it as, you know.
To get the rhyme. I know. Sorry, this is a shambolic start to this episode. Quite the keeper from Costa Rica. There we go. That's better. Very good. I say very good. Very unorthodox, I have to say. Like, the more I watch him and the save onto the bar, if we're going to break it down, he's actually started going to his right. He started to read the ball coming across him, thinking it was going to be cut across, and adjusted incredibly well to get his top hand up and tip it onto the bar. The penalty save ends the game. You have to give him credit. Big moment, big players, Lionel Messi. I mean, that's one of those moments that, I mean, he's already got so many from his career, of course, but when he looks back on his career, I'm sure that's going to be another one of those huge moments he'll no doubt be dining out on for some time to come, because that ended the game. You know, you think if they score that goal going into the second half, only needing the 2 goals in the second half, there's a chance they can do it. If anyone can do it, it's Barcelona. The amount of chances they did create in the game, I think you go into that half and it's still 1-1, it's effectively game over. So credit to him. In the end, it was a game-changing moment.
Agustín Marchesín, another good performance for Porto. 10 saves for him, one more than Navas, the best of which has to be that punch with pretty much the last kick of the game. That is as good as a goal, isn't it? Kind of a punch/save/parry. I don't know what it was.
And you almost feel sorry for him in that when you do it in the last minute of a game and the final whistle goes, you don't get the replays straight away. So ordinarily, we get a chance to fully digest it and see it over and over. But of course, it's pandemonium. The game finishes and you don't get to see it again. So we've watched it several times, rewound it. And as you say, I don't fully understand how he's managed to get it out, because he's gone to his right. There's a player there who should somehow be able to bundle it over the line, you would think. And he somehow got a massive hand and parried it. Not only got it away or got it out of that, but he's got a good few yards on it as well. Really, really good save. And it was one of many. You know, the amount of times he came out and so quick off this line, good shape when he spread. Just an excellent performance and a phenomenal victory.
Yeah, great Champions League campaign for him so far too. And a nice bit of S-housery, we're going to call it, in tripping up Morata after Juve had taken the lead. Loved seeing this.
Yeah, the moment, so Morata's kind of jumped over him, hasn't he? He didn't appreciate it, let's just say that. So he kind of flung out a leg. Probably a little bit lucky. I mean, could have been worse. You know, you've seen players sent off for that kind of thing. I don't think it would have been worth a red card, certainly, or worthy of one, sorry. But yeah, I don't mind that, certainly.
The free kick under the wall, just before we move on, Ronaldo turning his back. I could not believe what I was watching. It went under the wall. We've talked so much about the crocodile technique, I think it's called. Brozovic of Inter Milan coined that term, I think. Okay. And we see it adopted all the time. It wasn't adopted. There was no man lying behind the wall. It squirmed underneath Cristiano Ronaldo. And should Wojciech Szczesny save that free kick?
Oh, do you know what? I think, let's do it one by one. I think the wall itself, yeah, Ronaldo, I'm sure, will hold his hands up. Absolute shambles of a wall. When you pause it at the point that it's arrived at where the wall should be, not just Ronaldo, all of them, like the least brave wall that I've ever seen in my life, jumping, turning backs, etc. And as you say, you've got no one lying down behind the wall, which, I mean, I'm a bit skeptical of that anyway, just purely for the fact that you're using up another man, where really if the wall does its job correctly, which is you stay square, you stay strong, yeah, you can jump, but not too far. You have your toes pointed down as you jump. You should still cover that area anyway, I think, even without a man behind. Then should Szczesny save it? I mean, it's a frustrating one for him because It struck well, but it's not one that's absolutely fired in. It is bobbling a little bit as it's coming towards the goal. It's about a yard inside of the post. Look, should he save it? I'd say no, because the wall should have done its job. And that's the reason it's caught him by surprise. Now, in terms of the speed at which he got across to his right, he did manage to get a hand to it. Do I think that there's another goalkeeper on the planet that saves this? Possibly. I think there are other goalkeepers that may have got across that little bit quicker and maybe a little bit more powerful and got a bigger hand to it. He'll be frustrated because he did get a decent enough hand to it and actually got himself down to it. But once again, for me, I think you can't look past the fact that the wall just did not do its job.
If we're talking S-housery, by the way, we have to talk Erling Haaland and Sevilla goalkeeper Bunu as well. Bunu Bono, not quite sure the best way how to pronounce
this.
I'm
going Bono. Yeah, I mean, we've done this whole thing with Mendy. We've called him Mondi for however long. No one else has caught on.
Good point. Okay, well, Bono, with a brilliant double save from a Haaland penalty from which he let Haaland have both barrels. But sadly, it was a retake and Haaland made sure that he returned the favour.
Yeah, just a mental situation. That whole 2 minutes, 3 minutes worth of football or viewing, it was crazy. But yeah, Haaland, I mean, we're not really going to talk too much necessarily about the goalkeeper here, more really about Haaland, which, he certainly got an edge to him. You know, the more that I'm seeing him, of course, his record is just a joke. It's phenomenal. But yeah, look, he stepped up for the first penalty. Credit to the goalkeeper. It was a very good save. And I felt sorry for him, as much as they said that, you know, he was, I think it was McManaman, was it, on the commentary? He was like, oh, there you go. Yep, he's off his line. Barely. He's kind of jumped. And it's so hard to have complete control over where your feet are. They're not always necessarily going to be plumb on the line. If you do that little jump before you then dive, sometimes you might just be, in this case, what are we talking, an inch? It wasn't like he was a foot or 2 foot off the line. We're talking an inch and a half. And unfortunately, where he does then explode from, he doesn't have any part of his foot connected to the line. And of course, it's retaken. But again, you know my thoughts on penalties.
I lose my head with that, with the referee and off the line. And we've spoken about it on the podcast before, so we won't go into it. But again, you just saw it this week with referees telling goalkeepers to stay on the line. And Marc-Andre Ter Stegen, to be fair, just hopped up and down the line and just didn't look at the referee. The only goalkeeper I've seen acknowledge the referee so far, I think, throughout the entire time of seeing this happen is Wojciech Szczesny, because he did that when Porto had their penalty. I think they had a penalty, didn't they? Yeah, in their game. So he's the only goalkeeper I've seen so far. Dylan Phillips actually was brilliant in that game against Huddersfield, where he was just looking round the referee, looking through the referee, doing whatever he could do to not catch the referee's eyes. Because like we always say, it potentially kind of means you lose focus, doesn't it?
Yeah, it would annoy me when you got the goal, especially if he's making a real point of it. I mean, ultimately, look, it's not that goalkeepers don't know the rules. I think we need to make that point as well. It's, you know, when you're told it, of course you know that. You face however many penalties in your life and you know what the script is. And I go back to my point. Sometimes you're not necessarily going to be able to control where you land and you dive, you know, unless you're going to start doing sessions in training where you're considering your set technique on a penalty. But I don't think anyone's gone to that detail yet. And really, we don't want to have to go to that detail. I just think the penalties now, there's far too many penalties given, first and foremost. I think there's statistically that is true now. And it's more heavily weighted in the attacker's favour than it's ever been, which can't make sense.
No, absolutely not. Let's just quickly do one Premier League game. It was Manchester City against Southampton. Alex McCarthy back in as number one for Southampton. Were you surprised to see him in at the Etihad?
I was, and we had a bit of a discussion about this last night because, look, Fraser Forster's done very, very well. So on the face of it, I was surprised. And I'm going to put an idea out there, which, and again, I'm going to put this with the greatest respect to Alex McCarthy because he's one of the best goalkeepers in the Premier League at the moment, you know, around England squads, etc., etc. But I do just wonder whether this was done by the manager with the thought being that we are playing against a Man City team who are in full flow, take out the Man United game, what is it, one however many in a row, 20 odd in a row, whether he's looked at this and thought this isn't the kind of game where we're necessarily going to pick up the points we need in order to have the finish in the table that we want. Realistically, we may lose this game quite heavily in the way that they did. So then is that one where the goalkeeping position being what it is and confidence of goalkeepers sometimes potentially being a bit fragile, is it one where he's thought, do you know what, this is an opportunity for Alex McCarthy to come in to play another game, a game in which it's nothing to lose for him and that he is getting another appearance and it's against a fantastic team, but also then protecting Fraser Forster to an extent with the thought being that maybe Fraser Forster comes back in the next game where it's not going to be as difficult, doesn't get any more difficult than Man City away. And I just wondered that. It's a little bit out of left field, probably isn't the case at all, but I just wondered whether the manager may well be thinking in that way. What do you think?
Interesting insight. So essentially you're saying Hasan Hurtel has decided Fraser Forster is going to be the number one moving forward, thinks that they might concede or ship a few goals against Manchester City, brings Alex McCarthy in so as not to affect the confidence of Forster. Forster returns for the next game, confidence intact, still on a positive footing. Is that what you're saying?
That's essentially what I'm saying. And look, by the way, I'm very aware in saying this, the chances are it's probably a 10% chance of what I'm saying is correct, because the likelihood is that it's either he genuinely thinks that McCarthy was better placed for this game. I know I heard that it might be to do with the fact that McCarthy maybe has slightly better footwork.
That's the point, actually. I wanted to quiz you about this because it was going over my head and I was trying to figure out whether I don't know anything about football, because a lot of the chat during the game was they opted for McCarthy. This was from the punditry team and the commentators, because he was better with his feet than Fraser Forster and they were playing against Manchester City. So I was thinking, well, Manchester City obviously play out from the back and that's the way that City play, but why does that mean that Southampton then have to adopt a goalkeeper who does the same thing as Ederson? Surely it would work in their favour if they negated City's tactics in that sense, or would it not? Have I got that wrong?
Well, this is where I'm a bit confused by it as well, because I just think that I'm putting myself in Fraser Forster's shoes and he's just kept a clean sheet. And you could imagine the manager pulling him on the, well, it would have been the Tuesday, wouldn't it, before the Wednesday game, pulling him on the Tuesday saying, ah, I'm dropping you for the next game. Like, I'd have been absolutely fuming. It's like, well, what more can I do? Like, we've conceded quite a lot of goals lately. I've come in and kept a clean sheet. Surely I've done more than enough. And he's done so well in the cup games and other bits and pieces. Surely I've bought myself at least another game. Not to say that I am now number one, but I'd certainly like to think I've got the next game, which is why I go back to my strange theory that maybe this was almost a win-win in a weird way, in which he can position this quite nicely for both. And that Alex McCarthy, look, an opportunity to go and play. And by the way, McCarthy did well. Like, there was, we're going to talk about the penalty incident, I'm sure, which was, I'd say he got away with. But other than that, I thought he did fine. It's nice for him to go and get another game under his belt. But for Fraser Forster, it's almost, look, you're in a good place at the moment. You're not conceding goals. You're playing well when you play. I'm just going to pull you out for this one game. Get yourself focused, ready for the next game. We've got two fantastic goalkeepers on our hands. We're very lucky. We can use you both. And if anything, at the moment, you're likely to play ahead of Alex McCarthy just at this present moment. Again, hypothesizing here. And maybe that's the thinking. And I say, look, I say it's very, because the other thing is, it could be that Fraser Forster had a niggle. It could be one of 100 reasons. So it is unlikely to be this, but that is the thought that was just running around my mind. And again, I'm sure we're going to get, I'll probably get contacted by someone at Southampton telling me that I'm miles off it, or we'll get contacted by a lot of you guys that will have different ideas on this. But it was just a very strange one to me. I go back to that point. If you're Fraser Forster, you've just kept a clean sheet in the Premier League, you've played as well as you have when you've played. If it is for legitimate reasons, I can't help but feel that Fraser Forster must feel really disappointed.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah, it was just that notion that we're playing Manchester City. They play out from the back. We need a goalkeeper who can play out from the back. I didn't quite understand that theory. But again, maybe I've missed something completely there. I don't know. But the penalty. You mentioned the penalty that Phil Foden did not, well, did go down, but then brought himself back up. It was, I mean, a blazing penalty, surely.
It was, and I text you straight away. In fact, we do this, don't we? We exchange voice notes throughout each game. But I sent you a voice note straight away. And that, do you know what? There's so much to this that I want to talk about, and I won't go into too much detail. But the only thing I thought it straight away, and I thought, this is a penalty. Why hasn't Phil Foden stayed down? Now, on one hand, I love that he didn't stay down. I love the enthusiasm to get up and want to play on. What disappoints me now is that they haven't given it, which then leads into the idea that actually you should just throw yourself to the ground. Do you know what? We have a go at all these players for diving, but this is a perfect case in point. He's got up and tried to play on. He hasn't been given the penalty. If he stays down, 100% he gets the penalty. Should have got given it anyway. This whole VAR. No, this is it. You shouldn't have to, but now you have to. And that's the bit that bugs me about this, is that Phil Foden's done exactly what I'd want to see a footballer do. Get themselves up, try and get onto the second ball. You can't because you've been fouled. Now you should be given the penalty. The fact you haven't, again, all this is saying to players is, go down, stay down. Do you know what? You might get the odd booking for diving, but it's worth it if you end up winning a penalty for every 3 times you dive. So that's the bit that bugged me about it. In terms of the moment itself, obviously, ball come back. Alex McCarthy just wasn't able to get it under control. You know, I don't think we need to dissect it too much, but the touch wasn't quite how it needed to be. And as you would, he's then gone in for the lunging challenge. Didn't get any of the ball from what I could see. I watched it several times. Did get the man. Should have been a penalty. And it's just one that he got away with. And, you know, I've got no issue with him getting away with it. Certainly goalkeepers, there's a lot we don't get away with. So that was one of the good moments.
Not too many championship games, Richard. So we're going to do the championship and the best of the rest from the EFL all in one go, okay?
Excellent.
Good stuff. Freddie Woodman conceding a soft goal from Bradley Dack in Swansea's draw with Blackburn.
Yes and no. I think that we watched the commentary, which was very biased commentary, by the way. So we watched it on, I think, Swansea TV, which naturally when Swansea score, they go crazy. When any opposition score, they're quite negative about the situation. And I feel a little bit sorry for Freddie Woodman here, because he got a bit of criticism on the commentary saying that he should do better. Doesn't look great. It's gone through his legs, but look, if he's a yard deeper, he saves it. If he's a yard further forward, I think he does a different technique, maybe a spread, a long barrier, and might make the save. I think in the end, that's the only thing I would say, is it was kind of in between both and couldn't quite close his legs quick enough. As simple as that. So I think it's harsh to say that it's a mistake. I think it's just one that maybe when he looks back again, he's neither here nor there. Does he come or does he stay? And I think had he had done either of those, he might have just had a slightly better chance of saving it.
Four pens on the trot now for Andre Ayew. Thomas Kaminski, the Blackburn goalkeeper, very nearly saving that one, but just not managing to keep it out. Senny Dieng, a good save at 1-0 in QPR's win over Wickham, came at him quick, sharp reactions. And Keller Roos, a good save with feet to deny Connor Chaplin in Derby's goalless draw with Barnsley.
Yep, just a touch on them. No chance, Kaminski. It's not a great penalty, in fairness. It's one where he's gone to his right, couldn't get his left hand back. And even if he did, it's one that he probably has to parry out and they score the rebound. So I just don't think there's a lot that could have been done there. You mentioned the save from Senny Dieng. Indeed, got himself in a good position and a solid save, certainly to his right. But no, the save of note out of those to touch on was Keller Roos, who another clean sheet, big clean sheet, by the way. Tough place to go, certainly this season, the way that Barnsley have been doing. And he's just given himself maximum reaction time. He's dropped to his line. It's a great ball in, dropped to his line. And the speed at which he was able to move his feet to make the save with his feet and for it to go round the post out for a corner kick. Excellent save from close in. Great reactions.
Into League One, Toby Savin with an excellent save from Jonah Ayunga of Bristol Rovers. They were 2-0 down at the time and did lose 4-1, but a save's a save.
It is. We try to highlight the saves, isolate the saves, because, of course, there's not so much you can do about the result a lot of the time, although this was an off night for Accrington, obviously in such good form leading up to this. But no, this was a very good save. Yep, great reaction to his right-hand side. Fingertips, always nice when it comes off the post.
Northampton's Jonathan Mitchell giving his defence both barrels at Charlton's winner from Connor Washington. He palmed an Andrew Shinney shot back. Was that into a dangerous area? And did he have the right to have a go at his defenders?
It's a tough one. I think it was difficult to hold, so parry was probably the right decision. Just looked a little bit unorthodox. Didn't twist the hands, kind of almost scooped it up and out and tried to get as much distance on it as he possibly could. So it didn't look brilliant. I think, look, in terms of him then being frustrated, it's naturally you are frustrated. The ball goes out. You're hoping your defence are going to help you out. When they don't, and it ends up in the back of the net, naturally there is that frustration. I think we also see, I mean, I'll talk about this, goalkeepers have a certain style when they concede. You know, it's you tend to do a similar thing over and over. That reminded me a bit of the old Peter Schmeichel kind of way of going about things, where he was known for, even when he made saves or things happen, was straight away be out at Bruce and Pallister screaming and shouting, and they'd be screaming and shouting back. And I think you find that certain relationships between defence and goalkeeper are like that, whereas others might be completely different. Others might not react at all when they concede. And again, there's not a right or a wrong way. I think it's just finding your style. And I couldn't help but feel this. Maybe that was a touch of that, that it was almost, it looked like a normal reaction to get up. And he was obviously very frustrated and to let that out on the fullback in the way he did.
Doncaster's Lewis Smith with a tip over from an Omar Beckles header in their defeat against Crewe. Chris Maxwell with a big save from Cameron Jerome. He was through on goal as Blackpool were leading at MK Dons. He pushed the strike onto the bar, Chris Maxwell, or did he?
Yeah, definitely did. We've got to give benefit to the goalkeeper here. And in fact, I'm 99.9% sure he did. Ball struck, was going in the roof of the net, and he's just manoeuvred himself brilliantly to his right to get the fingertips up onto the bar and away. And in the end, vital save, obviously, with it being 1-0.
Matt Ingram, a good save from Frankie Kent in Hull's win at Peterborough. Jamie Jones making five saves as Wigan won at Plymouth. Great result for them. They hit the woodwork a few times too, but Jamie Jones, very decent performance. And Jack Stevens, another penalty save to his left, this time from Brett Pittman of Swindon. A big win for Oxford.
Yeah, and once again, we'll touch on the Jack Stevens penalty save. Not quite as flamboyant as the one on Saturday, certainly, and certainly not in the last minute. However, once again, it was at a crucial time in the game. 1-0 up against their rival Swindon, and then Oxford got up the other end and get the second, which in the end was enough to win the game. So, look, big moment for him, and at the moment, he certainly is riding the crest of a wave.
He is indeed, as is Alex Cairns of Fleetwood Town.
Save.
A great save in their win over Gillingham. This one was from Oliver Lee. A header came back across the box and Alex Cairns made a brilliant instinctive save, and then in the second half with his feet from John Akinde. And guess what, Rich?
What?
Text Talk. It's back.
Have we got him?
We've got him. Alex Cairns. Here he is talking about those two saves in particular.
Hi, lads. Yeah, so obviously in the week, you know, working obviously with Dave Lucas and sort of the manager and what have you, we sort of knew how direct that Gillingham were going to be. Know that they land on a lot of second ball, so I was expecting quite a busy night in terms of balls being put on top of as a back line and as a goalkeeper. So I thought generally the lads dealt with it well, but coming to the save, the one time they did break through, they sort of win the first phase with a header, and then the guy, so I'm following the ball as the ball comes in the box, they win the first contact that's going sort of across goal and towards sort of out of play, and their player manages to get a toe end on it. And then I've sort of seen the man before, I've seen sort of where the ball is, so I sort of know I have to react as the ball's going the opposite way, and I managed to claw it, you know. Luckily for me, I get there and managed to make a good save at sort of a key moment in the game as we were winning 1-0. They were putting a lot of pressure on us quite close to half-time, and no, it was definitely a big save at that moment. I really enjoyed it, and the lads were buzzing me at half time, which is always good for a keeper. And then the second one, Johnny Kindy manages again from like a second ball knockdown or something like that, similar to what they work on, clearly, because that's what they kept doing all game. Literally broke free and smashed one and managed to save it with my feet. So, yeah, it just went on from the work that we'd sort of done in the week of what to expect from Gillingham. Sort of the practice sort of went into the game. And as a goalkeeper, you know, you work on them little moments that can help define the game. And, you know, luckily for us, we win the game 1-0 and them two saves become big saves in the game.
Good, that, isn't it? Really good.
Very good. Yeah, love the fact that he's given a bit of love to his goalkeeper coach as well. Always nice. One of our podcast guests, of course, Dave Lucas. But yeah, I just want to touch on that first save. I'm not surprised the lads were buzzing off him at halftime, because that is the way in which he's managed to... Is it like a contortionist? Is that the word I'm looking? Where he's got himself back. The way in which he's moved his body doesn't really make sense at first when you've seen it. And the technique he's used, this is... And the fact he's mentioned his goalie coach there is interesting, because my comment initially would have been, this isn't the kind of thing you can train for. But I guess if you're doing a lot of training where you can get yourself back on yourself very quickly in order to do things like this, then great. And yeah, I've watched it several times. I don't quite know how he's managed to move his body the way he has and have the speed of thought to use the technique he did. And he certainly adopted the best technique in this situation to get it away.
That has to be the ultimate satisfaction, doesn't it, between goalkeeper and goalkeeper coach. And he alluded to it there, Alex Cairns, that, you know, they'd been looking at the way Gillingham played. And obviously you train specifically for your opposition, but to think about certain passages of play and to make saves according to those passages of play must be so satisfying.
Oh, massively. Because the thing is, you can do all the work on the training ground and you won't necessarily see it straight away. It will be at some point down the line, something will happen in a game and you'll suddenly have that moment, that's what I worked on, such and such, and great. But it sounds like he had instant rewards. Look, another good example, we touched on Jack Stevens' penalty save before. I know that Wayne Brown, the goalkeeper coach, had a big part to say in that, in which he's given diagrams to Jack Stevens saying, you need to dive in this corner, which Jack has done. And don't get me wrong, it's down to the goalkeeper then to execute the plan and what you're working on in training. But that comes back to where it is a team. You and your goalkeeper coach, you are a team. If you can build that bond, that relationship, that understanding, that trust, ultimately you both want the same outcome. However, ordinarily, it's only the goalkeeper that will get the credit and the blame, but certainly the credit. So it's nice. That's why I love the fact that he brought up Dave Lucas in that particular voice note.
It was a 1-0 win for Fleetwood as well, so the save was even more important. Elsewhere in that game, Jack Bonham almost got caught out with a lob from distance. Brilliant first touch with a flighted ball over the top. But the second touch, not so great, as he played it out from the back, but not to one of his players. Like we said, nearly got caught out, hit the bar. Did make a good save late on from Paddy Madden to make up for it though.
Yeah, indeed. It's one of them. I think when you've, and he's had a great touch, as you mentioned, sweeper keeper, plays on the front foot like he does. Now, from time to time, how often we've mentioned this, if you are the type of keeper like Jack that does play on the front foot and you're looking to cut things out of source, at times, you know, it's not necessarily going to go your way. And in fairness here, he was a bit unfortunate in that it's a great touch. He's tried to clear it with left foot, didn't quite catch it as Ilya wanted to. But of course, for someone then to control it as quick as they have and fire it towards goal with such precision, and obviously for it to come off the bar was extraordinary in the end. You know, it's going to happen from time to time. We've touched on it in recent times, the likes of MK Dons, the way they play. And it is these goalkeepers that are as proactive as they are. Of course, from time to time, that will then have another side to it. But as you mentioned, very good save late on and yet another solid performance.
Into League Two, Doyle and Noyle, with contrasting fortunes in a Cambridge defeat at Bolton. Callum Burton with a good reaction stop to deny Owen Doyle, but Matt Jilks in the same game letting one squirm through from Kyle Noyle.
Well, there you go. Some great wordplay there. And yeah, an odd one. And it has to be said, Matthew Jilks having a really good game up to this point. And in the end, it wasn't costly. I know a few people listened. I certainly listened to that Rob Green interview. It just made me think of that in the comment he made about, if you can consider it that if you're going to make a mistake, that top goalkeepers will make maybe three or four mistakes every season. So once you've made that mistake, of course, if you're going to make it, you'd rather make it in a 2-1 victory and actually being able to keep your head thereafter, not being affected by it and having the mentality of, okay, well, that's one of them that's gone. It's going to be a few months now until the next one comes. So it is what it is. And it felt like this with Matt Jilks because it was a very unusual one that he would ordinarily just gobble up very easily, but it has just squirmed through him, just gone over the line. Sure, it was a very frustrating one for him. But once again, the fact they've got the victory, I'm sure it won't bother him too much.
Grimsby's Jake Eastwood, a good save from a Brennan Dickinson header in their draw with Carlisle United. A double save from Josh Griffiths of Cheltenham, first from Jordan Bowery and then from Farrand Rawson. And Vaclav Hladký, a good save from Crawley's Ashley Naddison. Bit of a strange spread and the ball just trickled wide. Bit of an optical illusion, and Glenn Morris with an assist for the goal from Tom Nichols. An assist of sorts.
Yeah, you'll take it. Certainly, it was a big kick. I'll say that. It's so funny when you see goalkeepers that get assists and, you know, the amount of times he will have struck the ball like that. By the way, first and foremost, has to be said, loads of saves again from Glenn Morris. I think Salford had a good 7 or 8 shots on target once again. But this is one where he'll have hit that same strike several times, many times over his career. More often than not, it's headed back by the centre-back, but this one has found its way through, and in the end, it is an assist. Obviously, the goalkeeper made a save first. Does that affect it at all? If it's a second attempt, does that suddenly change the whether it's an assist or not?
Goalkeepers Union podcast, so we'll say no.
It's an assist.
Yeah, it's an assist. We'll give it. Lawrence Vigouroux, who was the subject of a mini keeper caper on the last podcast with a couple of strong parries into good areas and late an Orient's goalless draw with Stevenage, and then late on a phenomenal stop from an Elliot Osborne shot. Parried it over the bar.
Yeah, I mean, he was team of the week, and I think quite comfortably team of the week. I thought it was an excellent performance. You mentioned where we could talk about so many of the saves on the night, a couple of very good reaction saves. The one that I did really enjoy, you touched on, was the one he tipped over the bar. Doesn't really do it justice to say it was a tip over the bar because he's exploded to his left. I mean, it's struck with some force and he's just managed to get fingertips to tip it over the bar. Again, he moves so, so well. Such flexibility, power that he's got. Again, it's the type of save that I don't think you see many goalkeepers making. And in the end, it was good enough for a point.
Newport County beating Bradford City. And Nick Townsend, good decision making to engage when Andy Cook was through on goal. And when he did engage, really good speed. Also saved a knuckleball type shot from Connor Wood. Big saves as well as they went on to win the game, Newport County. And Ian Lawler, just to finish with a celebration after keeping out a left-footed shot in Oldham's goalless draw at Port Vale. Lots of goalless draws in midweek. We've seen quite a few of these, aren't we? But not an easy save to make. Not an easy goal mouth to negotiate at Vale Park. But the rebound was fired over the bar and he celebrated. Nice to see.
He did. Yeah, the goalless draws can't help but feel that everybody's just desperate to be part of the clean sheet club.
They're just so desperate to be in your club.
So desperate to be in that club. But no, I always like to see a little goalkeeping celebration. I go back to it before about when goalkeepers concede and what they do. And I know all you goalies listening in, you'll all have kind of a chosen reaction to a goal. But it's the same with a save. I was that one where I would get up quite slowly and kind of look around. That was like mine, and almost hope that a few of the teammates would come over and give you a pat on the back, or, you know, give you a little fist pump or something. But that was kind of my reaction. I know others are getting up, screaming, shouting, getting up really sharp, running to the edge of the box, or running towards the referee and just deciding to moan about something. Again, I don't know. What would your reaction be? I know you never played in goal, but what would your reaction have been to a great save? Would you have been a one to celebrate?
Cheers, mate. Thanks for reminding me that I never played at the highest level of professional football.
It's not your fault. It's a coordination issue more than anything.
Good on the Batak.
True. Yeah. That is true.
Yeah. What would I do?
Yeah, what would your reaction have been? Would you have celebrated?
I would have played football with a smile, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's such a boring answer.
Rate my save to finish?
Let's do it.
Okay, this was sent in by Lee McIntosh. It is of goalkeeper Michael Wilson, who is 14 years old, plays for Portobello CFA 2006s. I think that's right. He's from Craigor in Edinburgh. He trains at the number one goalkeeping academy run by Dunfermline goalkeeper Cameron Gill. He's also currently training with Hearts. Quite a busy man.
Okay, got all sorts going on.
A busy boy.
All right, I'm excited to see this.
You ready? Right, here we go.
Okay, so he's on the cone, set up in the goal mouth, waiting for the shout of go. Top corner, all got slow motion. Oh, what technique that is. Tip over the bar, very, very good. So just to describe what's going on here, because I know I'm watching this and you guys can't see it, it is that drill that you'll often see. So you've got in the goal mouth, you've got the cone 3 yards from the goal line, somewhat towards the middle of the goal, and you start on the cone. You then move to your left into the small goal in order to make the save, and it's thrown into the near top corner. So you have to turn your body quickly, get yourself up to the left. Then you've got a decision as to whether it's your left hand or your right hand you go with. Here, Michael has gone with his left hand, and it is phenomenal. The way in which he's moved his feet, you can see how he explodes off the left leg, how he's got that power in order to get there. Very, very good save. And yeah, if he's only 14 years old, can't help but feel he might have a very exciting future.
His goalkeeper coach are loving it as well, because sometimes this type of video can be misleading, can't it? And I know a lot of people have a bit of beef on Twitter about the fact it's set up in slow motion and you make it look like a camera save. You make it look fantastic, and really all someone's done is just lightly throw the ball. But because it's in slow motion, it looks fantastic. You can tell here that the pace, because it turns into slow motion midway through, that the server, his coach, who's delighted with the save, the reaction that he's given shows that it's not that. This is a genuinely good save. And we love the fact that it's on a park with a muddy goal mouth and the top of the bar with all the paint that's been completely stripped off. Love to see it.
You do love to see it. It's and you're right. No, it's, look, this is it's a great drill, I have to say. And you can see the goalkeeper coach, he's not just dollied it into the top corner. He has thrown it with a bit of pace. So that really, really good drill. If you do get chances, on our Twitter, I'm assuming?
It will be on our Twitter. Fantastic. At GK Union, yes. As will some of the saves that we've already described in this podcast, notably the Alex Cairns save.
Excellent. Sounds good to me.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, as always, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, keepers
away!